Hey, Southern Fried listeners, I've got a new obsession for you called Simply Vanished. It's a new investigative podcast about unsolved missing person cases. It's hosted by Josh Newville, a civil rights lawyer who is dedicated to finding answers. Josh alternates between full investigative seasons where he dives deep into one specific case and periods of episodic coverage where he tells us about unsolved missing person cases and solicits tips to help the official investigation. He has a dedicated tip line for listeners who may have information on the cases he covers, and it's fascinating to listen to his conversations with callers. Right now, Simply Vanished is on season one, and Josh is finding explosive new leads on a 20-year-old case of a missing college student. Simply Vanished is currently featured in the new and noteworthy section of Apple Podcasts' Dark Side Collection. Check out this great new show at simplyvanished.com and everywhere you get podcasts.
And then I wanted to ask you, because, you know, it's almost two decades since he vanished, right? This was back in 2002, which creates challenges. So obviously memories fade, evidence gets lost. But we also have to remember how different technology was back then. People didn't all have cell phones. No one had a smartphone, obviously, which could have created some breadcrumbs of what happened. So how does that pose any challenges to try to go back and use technology to maybe figure out what was going on?
Well, it's interesting. I think in some ways, the technology was more available to use then than they realized at the time. And so, for example, Josh had a computer. I mean, it wasn't, you know, a fancy new MacBook or anything like that. It was an older PC, and you know, I think he first got it in like 99 or 2000 or something, but he had a computer nonetheless. And that computer, as it turns out, is a treasure trove of information. But, you know, in 2002, when he was missing, you know, I don't think law enforcement or a lot of people, most people, really thought of a computer or electronic type evidence as, you know, critical, you know, valuable evidence. They were still kind of in an older mindset about what sort of evidence was crucial. So, yeah, Josh didn't have a cell phone, no. And you know, there are other kinds of evidence, like phone card evidence and things, but certainly we don't have the GPS, you know, tracking, the ping, you know, tower pings or anything like that that make these sorts of cases easier to solve today.
Yeah, because like today, you know, college friends and adult friends, we sit around on our own smartphones and laugh and share videos, but they did the same thing back then, only they would just kind of take turns using someone's computer to look at stuff, right?
And Josh did exactly that with his friends. In fact, on the day that Josh went missing, that's one of the activities that he was engaged in with his friends, in fact.
So Josh goes missing in the early hours of November 10th. So it's really November 9th is the day that's leading into his disappearance, right?
That's right.
So a lot of scrutiny on what happened that day, November 9th, I assume. Like every minute of that day is probably crucial. I mean, he wakes up, is that a Saturday, November 9th?
Yep.
So on a college campus, Saturday's a fun day. Lots of who knows what's going to happen. It's a weekend. Do you know when he wakes up and kind of roughly what does he do?
From 10:30 a.m. until 12:30 p.m., Josh researched Alexander Hamilton in preparation for a paper he was writing for his history class. During that same time frame, his computer also registered activity on AOL Instant Messenger. This messaging activity is believed to be with his ex-girlfriend, Katie. Josh went to the library between 12:30 and 1 p.m. to check out books relating to his history paper. He returned to his dorm at 12:57 p.m. Josh then continued using his computer to work on his history paper until approximately 2:30 p.m. During the next hour, Josh checked his email and searched online for seasonal employment near his hometown. At 3:46 p.m., Josh visited the College Movie Station website and viewed the movie schedule for that day. Just 9 minutes later, at 3:57 p.m., Josh entered his dorm room using his electronic access badge. It is unknown where he went in that short interim. During the 4 p.m. hour, Josh worked on a document in preparation for a budget request meeting for the pre-law society that was scheduled the next day. At 4:54 p.m., Josh performed a Yahoo search for the movie Brewster's Millions. Josh then had dinner with one or more of his friends, including Nick, during the 5 or 6 p.m. hours.
And eventually he does what most young college men are going to do. He meets up with friends, right?
Yeah. He had a friend come over around 7.
After dinner, at approximately 6:40 p.m., Josh's friend Alex joined him in his dorm room. There, they began listening to music, drinking beer, generally socializing, and using the web to search for things such as information about beer, brandy, and brew pubs. At approximately 8:30 p.m., Josh invited Alex and Nick outside to smoke celebratory cigars. These were cigars he purchased the weekend before at a mock trial tournament, as was his custom. Nick politely declined the cigar, but talked with them for a few minutes before leaving to hang out with Josh's ex, Katie, whom Nick had become friends with the year before. Josh and Katie had dated for 5 years, meeting in high school, going to college together, and breaking up approximately 1 to 2 months prior to his disappearance. During the 10 o'clock hour, Josh and Alex's friend, Greg, joined them in Josh's dorm room. There, they continued to drink beer, socialize, and use the internet. They looked up sports scores, comedy websites, and funny things in other students' shared drives.
And I know this is really important, so maybe let's take this in bites. So the main event of the night is some get-together at Nate's at a different dorm.
Right.
So how would Josh get to that dorm from his? How far apart are they? How long is the walk? Is there obstacles in the way?
Yeah, so we actually set up we put a aerial photograph with kind of some markings on the website to help listeners get a sense for this. And it's about a 5-minute walk. I actually just walked it last week.
We know he gets to this get-together. Do we know approximately what time he arrives?
There is a lack of clarity surrounding the exact time that Alex, Greg, and Josh jointly made the 5-minute walk from their Mauer House dormitory to their friend Nate's dorm at Menton Court in the Flintown area. There are some reports that they left at 11 p.m. and others that they left at 11:30. A wrinkle in the timeline is that Josh badged into his dorm room at 11:06 p.m. There is no explanation for this reentry. Perhaps he forgot something. Perhaps he let someone in. We simply do not know. Based on all available data, the best estimate for the time they arrived at Nate's dorm is between 11:15 and 11:30 p.m.
So, do we know what these kids are doing at this get-together?
Yeah, they were talking and playing some Texas Hold'em, and that's about it. I mean,
it's not some wild frat rager we're talking about.
Right. This was a group of approximately, all told, 10 people, and most of them Josh knew. Several of them were in his core group of friends. There were a couple people that he didn't know, but they knew other people there, and it wasn't like the door was open and random people were coming in and out or anything.
At some point, Josh leaves, right?
Sometime between, from what we understand, 11:45 and midnight, and, you know, my sense is that it was a little closer to midnight, but sometime between 11:45 and midnight, Josh gets up and leaves, and there's some dispute amongst people about whether he says anything or whether he just gets up and leaves. At least one person in particular recalls him somehow implying that he had somewhere to be. And another person, or at least one other person, doesn't recall him saying anything at all. And that's totally conceivable that both of those things could be true. He may have said something loud enough for only a few people to hear, and others maybe didn't hear anything.
Yeah, it'd be almost weird if he made some giant announcement to the entire room, right?
Right.
But what is really important probably is going to be if he did tell someone he had somewhere to be, that's going to be pretty crucial, right?
Right. And it doesn't sound like he told anyone explicitly that he had anywhere to be. One of the party attendees, his name is Eric. We're not going to provide last names. And when those names do come up, we're going to bleep them out. But Eric, one of the attendees, if you will, he does specifically recall Josh implying that he had somewhere to be. The way that Eric described it is that there's something about the way that Josh said he needed to go that it strongly suggested he had somewhere to be. That's all we know. And you know, that perception could have been wrong. That perception could have been dead on, right? We just don't know.